Economic uncertainty after the COVID-19 pandemic. What should be done with Confederate monuments in Virginia? And what can be done to address police brutality against law-abiding citizens? We're diving into all these hot-button issues with Salem Republican Congressman Morgan Griffith, who joins us live now by phone. Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good to have you with us again, along with Ian Price. Now, as we get underway, Congressman Griffith, what does the widespread response to the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis police custody show about the current state of race relations here in America?
Well, it shows that we have a long way yet to go. Obviously, that's just awful, horrific, and very tragic. And we have to do more. And, I think the protesters are right, those who've been peaceful. And in the 9th District, they've all been peaceful. I know we had a little problem over in Palaview, but that's not in the 9th, although very close. But the peaceful protesters are making their point and using the First Amendment the way it was intended to be used. And we're going to be taking action in Congress to do what we can at the federal level. But there needs to be a lot of different things done. Training for our police officers that are out there is extremely important. Making sure that we're paying our police officers sufficient amounts of money to, keep our best officers in our local police departments. Right now, many of them are attracted away by other jobs because the pay is so low. So we have to figure out how we're going to do that. Training is important. I have been told that, every officer is required to go to the shooting range annually. But when it comes to, how do you restrain somebody who's belligerent, or how do you deal with somebody who you may be able to talk through a situation, that training happens in your initial training, and then it doesn't happen again. And I heard tell of a officer who had not been back for that kind of training for 22 years. Now, it's a good officer. He hasn't done anything wrong. He tries to keep up on his own. But maybe we need to focus on that so that people can deal with So police officers can deal with difficult situations and understand how they should do it better. Now, that doesn't excuse what happened to George Floyd. That was just outright criminal. But we need to get rid of those folks. And there's a call to have records of previous incidents be made public. I think that's appropriate. I mean, there are a lot of things that we need to look at. And while the local police departments in the state we'll have to enact it. We do have a lot of grants that we give to police departments and for law enforcement that we should, put these things in there and say, you don't get the grant if you don't do this. And then one that I've heard that I particularly like is, we need to demilitarize our police departments. Now, they may need some of the safety equipment, but, they don't need all of the heavy weaponry that some of them have. And so we need to take a look at that as well.
Morgan, reporter, anchor, Ian Price here. Now, speaking of the police departments, defund the police proposals are going around essentially saying that maybe police are handling too many responsibilities, such as responding to mental health issues and things like that. Do you think police departments are wearing too many hats, so to speak?
Well, I don't know, because I don't know that I can say that. Because if somebody doesn't respond to a mental health situation, if the police are not doing that, if law enforcement's not doing that, when that mental health individual is either being violent or having other issues that are disruptive in the community, then I don't know who would. I think you'd just be having two groups show up, because I still think when you have, a mental health problem that may have triggered an outburst of some sort, the police are still going to have to respond. So I'm not sure they're carrying too many hats, but I do think that we need to make sure that we have people who are trained sufficiently on the police department to deal with mental health issues, because they are vastly different. I was telling somebody the other day of a situation where a young man was yelling and screaming in the parking lot of the courthouse. He happened to be a client of mine. He had severe mental health issues at the time, and the deputies were about to go out and get involved, and I said, he's not going to hurt his father. Just lay back a little bit. I've dealt with him for years. He's going to be fine. And they had a few more, the yelling went on for a couple more minutes. they did the officers were kind enough that they just kind of created a unseen parameter, and it all settled down. But, you know, every case is going to be different, and I just happened to be there at the right time to be able to say, I know this guy, he's going to be okay, and just let him settle down. He just yells a lot. If they'd have gotten involved, we might have had a very serious situation. So we have to deal with mental health a little bit differently, and we need to make sure we have a lot of officers who are trained. In that case, the officers were trained and handled it extremely well.
We're speaking with Salem Republican Congressman Morgan Griffith by phone. Now, some people have argued that statues like the Confederate statues are not used to teach history, but books are. Are these Confederate statues and memorials important to teach the Civil War to future generations?
Well, I'm a history guy. I was a history major at Emory and Henry, and I love history. And statues can be used that way. But I'm also a believer in elected representative government, and the legislature, through the election process, has given that power, and through their process, has given that power to, in some cases, the governor, and in some cases, local government. And they'll have to make that decision. But, you know, you did make a distinction between statues and memorials. And some are to glorify the past, and some are just memorials. And I hope people will, you know, recognize that some are just memorials. I mean, the one in Salem just says on it, love makes memory eternal. You know, that's clearly a memorial. But anyway. It's something that each locality is going to have to make a decision on, and the legislature gave that authority to them to do so.
Now, Congressman Griffith, what should happen to Confederate monuments in Virginia, like the Robert E. Lee Monument in Richmond, once they're taken down?
Well, that one, there's a whole more interesting story there that I think is just fascinating, and that is, you know, if the governor, as he has said he's going to do, he's going to take it down, but apparently there's a lawsuit that's been filed, and the state can still take the statue down. But the land was given as long as the statue was there. It sounds like, in what I've read in the newspapers, that there's a what's called a reversionary clause, which means the land goes back to the family of the original owners of the land. So now you're going to have a giant piece of property right in the middle of one of the busiest streets in Richmond, Monument Avenue, that's going to belong to private citizens. I envision a very popular Chick-fil-A sitting there in the middle of the road, drive in, drive out. I mean, these are things that sometimes have to be looked into, because it looks like to me, if that reversionary clause is truly a reversionary clause, and that's what they've alleged, while the state can still take the statue down, they may end up having to either buy the land at a large cost, because it's very valuable, or allow those folks to, as I say, have a drive-in, drive-out Chick-fil-A right smack dab in the middle of Monument Avenue.
Anyone who's driven in and around Richmond, especially Memorial Avenue, knows how dangerous that could be if that intersection became something else, right? We're speaking with Salem Republican Congressman Morgan Griffith by phone. Morgan, there are signs that we've seen the worst of the COVID-19 economic fallout. Employment in May rose more quickly than most people expected. Do you believe the government needs to provide any further economic assistance to those impacted? If so, how much, to whom, and for how long?
Well, we're debating all of those questions. I do think we have to take a look at some of our local governments and some of our state governments, but we have to be careful that we're actually addressing the loss in revenues, mainly sales and use tax. The problem is we can go too far. One of the things that was in the Democrat bill that was proposed and passed the House but isn't going anywhere in the Senate was a big part of their package was to restore the state and local tax deduction, known as the SALT tax. The problem is that benefits mostly wealthy big city communities, so that people in New York City get a bigger deduction. People in San Francisco get a bigger deduction. And who pays it? The people of the 9th Congressional District end up paying a big chunk of that, because our taxes are so much lower. In fact, on that tax, and deals with, you know, real estate and so forth, but on that tax, in the city of Salem, when we did the numbers in 2017, you would have had to have a house that was in the value of about $850,000. In most of the 9th District, you had to be getting close to a million or higher before you'd ever get, before this tax would help you, this change of this tax would help you, any that the Democrats had proposed. There are not many million-dollar houses in Southwest Virginia, not many $850,000 houses in Southwest Virginia. And so what that means is that those people who are living, you know, in the big cities and in the condos looking over Central Park would be getting a big deduction at the expense of other areas of the nation. So we have to make sure that what we're doing is fair to all parts of the country and doesn't just benefit those areas that where frankly, extremely wealthy people live.
Morgan, to what extent should the federal government provide financial assistance to states facing economic difficulties?
Well, I think we have to take a look at it, and I think we have to determine that extent. I don't know that we can make up the whole difference because, you know, money does not grow on trees, as my mother used to always tell me. And eventually it's going to have to be paid back by somebody, and we're just piling on the debt. But I do think that we have to try to help, particularly on those sales taxes that have been lost. I do think we have to help local and state governments to a certain extent. That number is going to have to be debated and ironed out, and there's going to have to be a compromise on that. But I do think we have to take a look at that going forward.
We're speaking with Salem Republican Congressman Morgan Griffith by phone. Is Southwest Virginia reopening in a timely manner?
Well, I've always believed it should be opening up quicker, that there should have been a regional approach sooner. I've said that numerous times, told the governor that early on. You know, here's what people have forgotten. We originally shut down the government and passed that original bill on March 27th so that we would have time to have the hospitals get everything organized, that we would have time to get enough of the PPE available. Now we have advertisements everywhere you turn around for masks because everybody's making them. That's great. Love to see American masks being made. But we never said we were going to wipe out the disease. We never said, I mean, we'd love to, but we never said that that was the purpose of closing down the government. The purpose was to make sure that we didn't overrun our hospitals with cases. There's only one state right now that is looking at maybe having a problem with enough hospital beds. That's, I believe I read an article this morning on Arizona. You know, we have plenty of hospital beds in our area. We can handle it. Yes, people should be careful. We need to be very, very careful with our elderly and nursing home populations, anybody living in congregate care. But we should be reopening the government a little bit faster. And, you know, the schools are having problems. And I know the school kids can spread the disease and can take it home and so forth. But we're going to have them in Salem going back to school for basically one day a week. I heard Rita Bishop on your radio earlier this morning talking about how it's going to be difficult with the buses. You got to transport these children. And the risk is not that high if we just made a few little changes in there, looking at it from a regional approach as well, made a few little changes. We could probably get those kids in school for more than just one day a week. And that's very concerning because teachers do a great job. And it's much better when they're live face-to-face with the student.
Morgan, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.